Our film critic John Powers is back from France, where he was checking out new films from around the world at the Cannes Film Festival. Many of the movies he saw will be making their way to American theaters. We asked him to tell us about the festival, beginning with this year's winners, which were announced Sunday night.
There were two big winners at Cannes this year. The winner of the Palme d'Or, which is the top prize, was the Greek director Theo Angelopoulos, who I've always described as the Bob Dole of international filmmaking, because he's always running for awards. And this year was no exception. He made a very pretentious film that I didn't like at all, called Eternity and a Day, which many people claimed was the running time rather than the actual title. And it was about a Greek poet who basically who's going to die, but before he dies, wanders the streets in very long shots and dreams about his past, memories of his ex-wife, and then to show kind of a patina of social concern, meets a small Albanian refugee boy, and they hang out for a while. Not much happens in this story, which ends over and over and over again. Things just keep going on and on and on in incredibly long shots. But Angelopoulos, who I can't stand, has a huge reputation in Europe. And for years, people have been saying it's a tragedy that he'd never won a huge international award. No one felt this tragedy more acutely than Angelopoulos himself, who the last time he had a film at Cannes called Ulysses Gaze with Harvey Keitel won second prize. And was booed because when he accepted the prize, he said he expected to win the first prize. This year, he did win the first prize, but keeping with his tradition of being a sorehead, managed to claim when he won the prize this year, he said, well, it's about time I won. So that he actually not only was a bad loser last time, but a bad winner this time.
So what was the other big prize?
Well, the other big prize went to a Roberto Benigni film called Life is Beautiful. And in a way, it was the real winner of the festival, because even though it finished second, it was easily the most popular film at the festival. Once again, I didn't like it much, and I think if I just describe it to you, maybe you'll understand why. It's sort of a Chaplin-esque story about a father played by Benigni himself, the Italian comedian. And essentially, the first half of the movie is him meeting his wife and sort of wooing her and then having a child. The second half is when they're taken because he's a Jew. He and his son and his wife are taken to a concentration camp. And the theme of the second half is the way that Benigni tries to convince his son that they're not actually in a death camp, but are actually playing a game. And so in scene after scene, as, for example, all the other kids are carted off, Benigni will explain to his son, well, we get 50 points if we hide and we don't get caught. And so an hour of the film is essentially him trying to convince his son that the son will win a full-size tank if he gets enough points by surviving what's going on in the camp. And the camp looks kind of like it's like the death camp version of the prisoner of war camp in Hogan's Heroes, where Benigni, although he's actually being forced to work all the time, is still able to sneak away at certain moments and broadcast messages to his wife over the loudspeaker of the camp. And all of this is done in a kind of whimsical Chaplin-esque way. And the audience ate it up. It got a 10-minute standing ovation. Miramax has bought it. They're going to win at least one Oscar with it. They're going to make $1 zillion because it's a real kind of crowd-pleasing film. And I just didn't like it at all.
The whimsy and concentration camp were in a perfect match for you?
Well, I thought that was a miscalculation. But in a second way, I just didn't think it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's the peculiar thing, it's like those old jokes about the food being bad and the portions not being big enough. Here... I think this is a bad idea for a film. If you're actually trying to make a film about protecting your child from the evil in the world, I'm not sure the Holocaust is the way I would do it. But in addition to that, then a lot of the jokes are very, very badly timed. The second half where he's playing the game with his son, it just goes on and on and on. And I find it watching it positively excruciating. Miramax wrote to sort of explain what was going on, perhaps the most refined, articulate, and complicated press kit in the history of cinema. Sort of going through all the issues raised by this particular film. There's going to be a huge PR push. I think the mayor of Jerusalem has already given Roberto Benigni an award. And I keep expecting that somehow they will discover some letter from Primo Levi saying that he would be happy to be alive if he'd only seen a Chaplin-esque comedy about the concentration camps.
Well, what were the most interesting American films at Cannes?
Well, there were basically two really interesting American films at Cannes. One of the things that happened was that the official competition missed a lot of the most interesting American films that are coming out or have come out. So they didn't choose Bulworth. They somehow muffed getting The Truman Show. They didn't get the Spike Lee film. The two big films were American Independence. They weren't big studio films. The more successful of the two was a film called Happiness by Todd Solondz, who people will remember from Welcome to the Dollhouse, which was a film that came out a couple of years ago and that a lot of people, including me, overpraised because it actually had some nice stuff in it, but it wasn't fully achieved. And Happiness played very early in the festival, and to everyone's amazement, is really, really, really good. It's a sharp, very bleak, very funny comedy about people being humiliated in New Jersey. It's sort of an Altman-esque story where you interweave several stories, and it's basically about how people's lives in this suburban world have sort of small moments of fleeting happiness surrounded by all sorts of horror, loneliness, and isolation. It's the kind of leap that he made in this one was the kind of leap that Quentin Tarantino made, say, between Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, which was that when you saw Welcome to the Dollhouse, you thought it was possible this might be the only film this guy could ever make. Because it seemed so personal in its geekiness that you thought maybe he was working out some sort of problem of his own from high school. Whereas this film is much more expansive. It's really hilarious. And it sort of took the festival by storm. I mean, once again, the festival organizers of the official competition made this huge blunder and didn't include it in the official competition. So Happiness, which I think everyone would think was the best American film there, it won the International Critics Prize unanimously, was actually in the third rank category because the official con people turned it down. The other film was by another Todd, and actually had the same producer, Christine Vacham, and it's called Velvet Goldmine. It was the film I was looking forward to most at Cannes, and it's basically a riff in a very complicated way on the glam rock period of the 70s. And it's made by Todd Haynes, who's made a series of very interesting and complicated movies. His last one was called Safe. Before that, he'd made a gay film called Poison. And before that, a kind of legendary, hard-to-see film called Superstar, which was about Karen Carpenter and used Barbie dolls to enact the life of Karen Carpenter. This is a film about glam rock that basically tries to position the history of glam rock as part of a movement that was created by Oscar Wilde. And actually, Oscar Wilde as a child appears in the film, and more or less showing how it was a kind of area of freedom that was created in the 70s that was actually far more radical than the hippie period on the one hand, and then was kind of swallowed up by the Reagan 80s.
You really wanted to see it. It's the film you were most looking forward to. Did you like it?
I was disappointed by it, and yet I think it's good. I think the problem with a film being the film you most want to see is that then you are expecting greatness. And the film wants to be great, and I think it isn't great. It has really wonderful, smart things all the way through. I enjoyed watching every minute of it. But somehow the narrative doesn't quite work. You're never quite fully engaged in the story. And it doesn't quite do the thing that I think that it has to do, which is to make you feel the incredible, magical quality of the glam rock era. The film tells you over and over again this was a magical time, but you never quite feel it. And I think there's not much you can do about that. Having said that, the film was one of the three or four smartest films in the festival. It's extremely well shot. It's very well acted. It has more ideas. In fact, it has too many ideas than probably any other film in the competition. So it was actually a very strong film. But when you compared it to something like Happiness, which was simpler but worked through far more perfectly, you know, it's not as good a film.
We're talking with Fresh Air film critic John Powers. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the Cannes Film Festival with our film critic John Powers. How much does success at Cannes mean for the future of a film in America? Is there a correlation between success at Cannes and success at the box office in the States?
There's no strong correlation. If you have a film that was likely to be popular, like Pulp Fiction, I think Cannes gives it a good send-off. If it's a film like Secrets and Lies, like Mike Leigh's Secrets and Lies, it also will get a bit of a send-off. But if it's a foreign film, it makes almost no difference. I mean, you know, in fact, one of the interesting things is that if you look at the last few winners, this year's winner, Theo Angelopoulos, will have a very difficult time just getting a movie deal by even a small distributor to have this film shown in the United States. Last year's two winners, it was a tie. One was a film by Shohei Imamura called The Eel. It's about to be released, but no one's going to go. And the other was Abbas Kiarostami's The Taste of Cherry, which once again got a very small release from a very small company and didn't make much money. So I think the curious thing is that in the United States terms, you know, to win Cannes means very, very little. I think Cannes is much more a celebrity media event in the United States. And then somehow if a Hollywood picture, or at least some sort of American film wins, it becomes a big deal. But if it's a foreign film, it actually makes almost no difference to how much it'll be seen in the United States.
Did you get any sense at Cannes about directions that filmmakers seem to be heading in, any themes emerging or patterns emerging, or any films of the recent past that seem to be having a big impact on the films that are coming out now in the way that, say, Pulp Fiction had an impact on so many films?
Yes, well, I think we've actually, you know, mercifully finally entered the post-Tarantino period. But we may have actually entered something that's kind of even slightly more disturbing. You know, the great theme of this year's festival was to make extremely funny, very, very bleak black comedies about things that don't seem very funny. I mean, even if you take the Benigni film about the Holocaust camp, although it wasn't a black comedy, I mean, it was a comedy about the Holocaust. The film Happiness by Todd Solondz, which was one of the best films there, which is a film about New Jersey, has one as one of its major characters a child molester. There was a film from Denmark, which was a black comedy about a family coming to terms with the fact that the father of the family had molested two of the children. There was a French film called Sitcom, which ends up with the mother having sex with the son. So that on the one hand, there seemed to be this kind of desire to sort of push the envelope of taste and acceptability, which I think is sort of a classic, I guess, avant-garde strategies. You're trying to sort of break through. On the other hand, and perhaps was that dialectically linked to that kind of pushingness, there's a new strand of sentimentality in international film. So like that a lot of the great films that people loved the most are about children. So I mean, there was a film about waifs from Colombia. There was a film about waifs from Indonesia. The Benigni film all turns on a child. The Angelopoulos film that won has a child being spotted by the aging guy who's at the heart of it. So there's this weird sort of oppositional trend in these movies. On the one hand, the films are really bleak and nasty and dark, and on the other hand, they're very sentimental stories about children.
Any other films you want to mention that you want us to look out for when they do open theatrically, if they do open theatrically?
Well, there were two English language films that won prizes, you know, that I think are definitely worth mentioning. The best screenplay went to Hal Hartley, who had written a film called Henry Fool, which is, I think, a not completely successful film about a pretentious writer who sort of more or less helps this guy, this inarticulate guy, to start writing. And then it turns out that the inarticulate guy is actually a genius, whereas the kind of Henry Miller-esque, grungy, Bukowski-esque guy who thinks he's a genius actually isn't very talented. What's interesting about the film is that it has played in lots of festivals before now. It's opening in the States on June 19th. But I think the French particularly embraced it because they love the image of the kind of filthy, dirty, down-and-out American. You know, the French, they always loved Henry Miller. They always loved Mickey Rourke. They loved Charles Bukowski. And the writer figure in this is sort of like right up the alley for the French audience. So this was a great success among the French people. And it was probably in lots of ways the most written film in the festival, which is, I think, one reason why it won the screenplay prize. The best director prize went to John Borman for the best film he's made in years and years and years and years. It's called The General, and it's about a famous Irish thief named Martin Cahill who was born in one of the poorest slums of Dublin and then gradually wound up being murdered by the IRA because he somehow was so busy being a crook he didn't care who he offended along the way. And in lots of ways, it was the most sumptuous movie of the festival. I mean, Borman is one of the world's great visual stylists, and he uses widescreen here in black and white photography that's just absolutely ravishing. And I think it's one sign of, you know, how beautifully directed this film is that it would win when in lots of ways you might not think it would win. But Scorsese was the head of the jury, and I think he can tell a well-directed film. You know, when you were watching the Borman film, a lot of the other films you saw before and after it looked a bit like television, whereas this actually had that full widescreen, rich black and white look, and you thought, wow, no, I'm really seeing a movie now. I'm not just seeing a well-made TV show. I'm not just seeing a video. I'm actually seeing something that needs a big screen and will bowl you over with that.
Well, John, listen, thanks for the review of what happened at Cannes. I know you're probably feeling very sorry that you had to miss the theatrical opening in the United States of Godzilla when you were gone, but...
Yes, that and the ending of Seinfeld, which...
Oh, you were gone for that, too.
Yeah, so actually one of the funny things that happened at Cannes was that there's an American pavilion, which is sort of a tented area set up at the beach or by the beach where Americans go to do business and to eat sandwiches and hang out with other Americans. And on the night of the Seinfeld thing, many people showed up at 2:30 in the morning because they were going to somehow get a special satellite feed of the Seinfeld finale, live, or not live, but at Cannes, because people desperately wanted to know it. And somehow, especially early in this particular festival, so little seemed to be going on that the ending of Seinfeld seemed far more important than any film that was going to be shown.
Well, John, welcome back to the States, and thanks very much for telling us about the Cannes Film Festival.
Sure thing.
John Powers is Fresh Air's film critic and film critic for Vogue.